precede that. And it involves turning the beds upside down. We spoke a little bit about the symbolism, but it was something which the Gemara tells us would be done not only to the bed of the mourner, but to every bed in the house. And let's pick up with that point. It's the last narrow line towards the top of the page. Tanu Rabbanan in the middle. Hakofe mitaso, when a person performs this act of turning their bed upside down, lo mitaso bilvad hukofe, elo kol mitos sheyesh lo b'sobeso hukofe. Not just his own bed, but every bed in the house also has to be overturned. Vafilu yesh lo eser mitos basar mekomos. Even if he has 10 beds and 10 different places, he has a lot of houses in the neighborhood, he has to turn them all over. Okay, maybe even beyond the neighborhood. Vafilu chamisha achim.
Even though he's not there.
Even if he's not there, yeah. Even if he's not there.
There's people in the house sleep on. Like they say, his wife's bed, his children's
bed. Yeah. This is something we're going to see. One, I brought some handouts. If we have time, I want to give a little attention to this chiddush. In general, the aspects of avelus that we're familiar with, they apply as you're pointing out to the avel, and that's it. Here we have something which seems to be more a function of the home rather than the people in the home. Okay, and we'll get to that. So the whole tzura, the whole appearance of the house changes with this furniture move. Bafilu yesh lo esher mitos basar mekomos. Even if he has 10 beds, 10 different places, asar mekomos kofa is cool, and he has to turn them all upside down. Bafilu chamisha achin umeis echad kulan kofen. Even if there were several brothers, let's say there were 5 brothers in the family. Okay, one of them dies. Even if they're not all sleeping in the house where the person died, they all have to overturn their beds. Okay, and the reason is because it's not simply the house where the misa occurs. It's beyond that. It's every house that's associated with the avelos, no matter what the location. Okay, so this is, you're right, this is something very unique. Continues the Gemara. Let's say you have a bed. And a bed is very loosely defined. You know, we have a bed, you have a bed in your bedroom. You know, in those days, there weren't you don't always have like a den and a living room and a dining room. It was usually, think of Abraham Lincoln, it was one big room. In fact, well, one thing to consider in the sugya is that even though you see the word bias in halacha often means room. It's just that when you had a house, there was only one room in the house. So that's the terminology. But there's maybe dinim that apply to the room specifically, and not the house, but we use the term house because that's how you discussed it. Okay, so stay tuned. But one thing we have as an exception over here to this rule is mita hamyuchedes lekelim. If it's a bed that was designated not for sleeping on, but you stored things, you placed things on the bed for your kids moved out of the house, now you need some room for all those extra papers, and so you put it on the bed. Okay, everyone has some room in their house, with a lot of junk. Okay, so ein sarach lechavosa. That type of bed you don't need to overturn. Okay, so it's only beds that are functional. Okay, dargish ein sarach lechavosa. A dargish does not have to be overturned. What is a dargish? Good question. I don't know. The Gemara doesn't know either. It's going to take a few lines till we figure this out. Okay. A what? No. All right. Mazel tov bed. Okay. Again, I still don't know what you're talking about. Okay.
Oh, a mazel tov bed. Okay.
Oh. This was, I don't know, this wasn't in Fiddler on the Roof.
It says here, used for good luck.
Yeah. Okay. No. I don't know what it says over there. I got a few lines of Gemara to read. We're going to figure this out. Okay. So, dargish ein sarach lechaposo. You don't need to overturn a dargish. El zokfo. So, zokfo means to put it upright, meaning instead of flipping it, 360 degrees, only 180 degrees. You put it like sideways. Mm-hmm. Okay? Maybe that's 90 degrees, I guess. Okay, I guess. But imagine a bed and you just turn it on its side instead of flipping it upside down 180. I should say 90 degrees instead of 180 degrees. Rav Shem Ben Gamliel Omer, Rav Shem Ben Gamliel says, no, that's not what you do with a dargish. What you do with a dargish is, dargish mater es karbitov v'hu nofo me'elov. You unstrap or you untie the straps that hold it all together, and it just sort of collapses. Okay, so the dargish, whatever it was for, was assembled from different pieces, and for whatever reason, the Gemara says you don't have to turn it upside down, you just have to, put it in some sort of unusual position or collapse it. Okay, now the Gemara asks, my dargish, what exactly is a dargish? Amr Ula, Arsa Degada. So the literal translation, an Arsa, or an Arsa, or Arisa is a bed. That's also the term, yeah, for crib. Usually when we talk about a baby crib, right? Eres devai also means the deathbed, right? So eres arsa means a bed, degada. So God, you ever buy those scratch-off tickets in Israel, you know, at the Mefal HaPayis, you know, when I was...
Yeah,
so, you know, the in Israel, the lottery company or whatever it's called, you know, lottery authority is called Chishgad, which means quick luck. Or, you know, that's the scratch-off games are called Chishgad, quick luck, you know, instant money, instant win, something like that. So Gada, the word God means luck. Okay.
Bogat,
right? Rashi says that you know, good fortune has arrived when Leah names her son God, names him Mazel. There are people walking around nowadays. Their name is Mazel. You know, it's a very popular Israeli woman's name. Okay.
Mazel Tov.
Okay. So Arsa Degada literally means a Mazel Tov bed or a good luck bed. So that's a strange thing to have in your house. Okay. At least if you're Jewish. Okay, it sounds like a little bit heebie-jeebies, some kind of weird practice. So some understand it's not that having this bed in your house and what people would do is they'd have an open bed, they would leave it empty, no one would sleep in it, and it was just there because it had some significance to it, okay? Some explain this Gemara, it means that if you had this empty bed, that would invite good luck to reside, to rest on the bed. The Mepharshim reject that because you can't do that. That's like... You know, I don't know, some sort of voodoo or something like that.
Dark Amori.
This is, you know, what the Goyim used to do. We don't have these voodoo things. But instead they explain that it's a simen tov. Meaning if you have an extra bed, if you have the money for some, you know, unnecessary furniture, so that displays success, that displays you know, good fortune. And we do this in smaller degrees. Maybe you have the minhag of overflowing the cup at Havdalah. A lot of people do that. They take the wine, they put it in their pockets. Symbolically, and the Gemara says this was a common practice at a party, at a simcha. They would just like, you know, like after you win the Super Bowl, you know, you pop the cork and just like spray around the champagne. Someone who has a lot of money to spend and can just sort of, you know, pour wine like it's water. So that's a simen tov. So does that mean that if you do those things, you're suddenly going to become rich? No, it doesn't mean that.
Maybe it's like a guest bed. So you have Baruch, you have a place for them to stay.
In theory. But you don't actually use it, though. Yeah, you don't actually. It's to say, look, if I had guests, I have room for them, too. That's the idea. So what the significance of that is, that's a good question. Maybe the pshat is by demonstrating to Hashem, you know, we're so happy, all the blessings that you give us, the more we appreciate what Hashem gives us, so then we, you know, we're more deserving of further. Again, it's not so clear.
Again, if they're not part of your household, then maybe that is no reason why to turn over the bed.
So... We don't overturn this bed 100%. We only overturn it 50%. So it's not quite the bed we were talking about before, which is designated for Kalim. No one sleeps on. Here, it's a bed which is fit for sleeping on. It's not designated for another purpose, but since it's not actually used, we also don't have to flip it over. So it's somewhere in between. Okay? Very, very strange. Very, very hard to understand.
If you have a guest staying over, that's the point. If you have a guest staying over, would they have to turn over the bed because they're supposed to do it?
Yeah. Yeah, the bed itself has to be turned. It's not a function of who's sleeping there. Mm-hmm. That is correct. Okay. All right. Let's shift focus. The Gemara says as follows. Actually, before we leave that topic, first we're going to try to check this out and make sure that this is correct. This is really the correct understanding of dargish. Amalei Rabba said, if that's really what a dargish is, Elmi Ata Gabe Melech. We have a discussion about a king who loses a relative and he's in Avelis. This not, the Mishnah says, this is a Mishnah in Nedarim. It's quoted in Sanhedrin, sorry. Kol ha'am mesubim al ha'aretz, v'hu mesav al ha'dargish. When the people come to console the king or to meet with him after he's now in Avelis, so they all sit on the floor and he's the one who sits on a dargish, right? It's the reverse of what we're used to. Usually the avil is on a lower chair, and the avilim, and the menachemim, the friends and the family, they're on a higher chair. Here, the king is sitting at a higher level than the people. Now, there are two ways to understand this Gemara. Either it means the king has one exception to the rules of avilis, or some understand that this is really emblematic of the fact that he really has no practices of avilis. The king has to be exalted. The king has to be always at in a state of grandeur and a state of prominence, and to have him observe the rules of Avelos would demote him in a certain sense. It says in the Torah, Som Tasim Alecha Melech. You should place a king upon you. And Chazal understand, Alecha means, right, that Shetei Emoso Alecha. At every point in time, as long as he's the ruler, he has to be seen, you know, put him on a pedestal. So even when he's in Avelos, everyone else sits on the floor and he sits on a higher level.
Does that create for a king?
Korea might be different. Korea might be different. That's not the same type of, you know, wallowing in sorrow. That's a response to bad news, right? We saw earlier that it's not about death. It could be a whole range of, you know, unfortunate news that you hear. Okay? So... So it's interesting. And David HaMelech had a son. He lost a son. He lost a baby. And we actually learned some of the laws of Avelos from that episode. So there's what to talk about over here. You're absolutely right. At least it seems that he does not have this practice of it, at the very least. Okay? So he sits above everybody else. So this Dargish, it's almost like his throne, right? So the Gemara asks, if you see in that Mishnah that he's Mesavala Dargish, he sits on the higher chair. So mi ikamidi da'ar ha'ina lo'osvine v'hashtra mo'osvinalei? You're going to tell me that a Dargish is usually something that no one ever sits on. It's just there for this symbolic... you know, purpose of luck or whatever. And all of a sudden, when he loses a relative, that's where you put him? Isn't that strange? Right? That can't be the definition of a dargish, because why are you suddenly putting the king on a dargish? Okay, Maskev, Ravashi, you know, responded, my kusha, why is that a problem? Mi didahava achi lushasiya. You know, there's nothing about what we just described that's normal. Okay? The eating and drinking, I'm sorry, I was not precise. When we saw that mission a moment ago, and the people are coming to be with the king, it's the Sudas Havra. It's the first meal after the burial is complete. Okay? So he's sitting up on the dargish, and everyone else is on the floor, and they're feeding him. Because that's a halacha. Here we do see the king, like everybody else, he's not allowed to eat from his own food. That first meal has to be served by the community. So here also, you're serving the king. You're giving him food, you're giving him what to drink. So you're going to ask, that's also not normal, right? When do you ever have, you know, the commoners feeding the king? The king's rich, he doesn't need anybody's service. Ad ha'idna lo ochline v'lo ashkine. Up until now, you never had the people serving the king, and hashta ochline v'ashkine. And now, after he loses the relative, the people are feeding him and giving him to drink. So it's really not a kasha, it's really not a problem if you see some unusual behavior. That's the nature of Avelos. You do things differently when you're on Avelos. So maybe he sits on a dargish. You know, you got to find some place for him to sit, even though it's not the normal place for him to sit. Okay? But the Gemara says there's still something else you can ask. If you want to poke holes in my theory that a dargish is this special good luck chair, el ikasha, hakasha. If you want to ask a question, this is what you should ask. This not. Dargish eino tzarech l'chafoso el zokfo. We said earlier, the dargish doesn't have to be flipped upside down, it only has to be put on its side. The arsa degada, amayinu tzarech l'chafoso. If it's true that it's a bed, whatever the reason for the bed is, it's a bed, right? Didn't you tell me? Hatanan, hakofa mitoso. Someone who overturns his bed, lo mitoso bovaru kofa. It's not just his bed, el ko mito shiesh lo pesel beso kofa. He has to turn every bed in his house upside down. So good luck bed, bad luck bed, I don't care, it's a bed. Right, so he should have to turn upside down. Why do you see that we only turn it halfway if it's really a bed? So Gemara says, my kasha, that's also not a problem. Midi dahava amita miuchedes lekelim, a mita that's designated for storing things on it, for putting kelim on it. We already saw that's an exception. You don't have to overturn that bed. Disan is, as the Brisa taught us a little while ago, im haisa mita miuchedes lekelim, if the bed was only for use, for storage, for putting kelim on it, ain't no tzarech l'chafoso. You don't have to overturn it. Now, we could interject over here, yeah, but that you don't have to turn over at all, but the dargish we saw you turn on its side. Okay, akasha, not for now. El ikasha, hakasha. If you want to ask a question, this is the question you should ask. What did Rav Shimon ben Gamliel say? The Tanakhama said, turn it over on its side, and Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said, Omer, dargish mater karbita v'unof me'ilv. Undo the straps, and it collapses. If a dargish is this good luck bed, my karbitan islay, does that type of bed have straps? That's not normal. Beds weren't made like that. Beds were not made with straps that were tied and untied. How could it be a bed? If that's the way we learn, it was undone. Ki asa Ravin, when Ravin came along, Ravin was always coming. You see, Ravin, he's always coming from somewhere. Right, he spent time in Eretz Yisrael, and very often he would come and return to Bavel, to Babylonia, and teach them some of the traditions that he had learned from the Chachamim in Eretz Yisrael. So, right, there was a few Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, they would come to Bavel. So, ki asa Ravin, Ravin would, you know, come and clarify things. Amalei hum rabbanon, Rav Tachlifa bar Maravishme. I'm going to tell you something in the name of this individual, Rav Tachlifa bar Marava. Okay, makes sense. Rav Tachlifa bar Marava doesn't mean he was the son of Marava. He was a bar Marava, like a bar mitzvah. He was from the west, the Israel to the west of Babylonia. So that's how they refer to it. Zahav shchiach b'shukah d'gildoy. He had a special claim to fame. He used to hang out in the shukah in the marketplace of the Gildoy. The Gildoy, leather workers. Okay, so he had a little more expertise about furniture, leather furniture, okay? And he revealed to us what this Bryce is talking about. My dargish, arsa ditzla. It was a bed, but it was a bed of ditzla is leather, okay? So it was constructed differently than every other bed. So you asked me a moment ago, if it's really a bed, well, what's all this untying the straps and everything? The answer is, because your bed was, you know, was, I don't know, it was a fabric stuffed with straw, whatever they used to sleep on. This was a different type of bed. And that's why it had the leather straps. Itmar Nami, we learned similarly, Itmar, a quotation from the Amoraim. Amr Yirmiyah, Dargish Sirugo Mitocho, Mita Siruga Agaba. The experts, the bed furniture experts, describe the difference between a Dargish and a bed as follows. A dargish, the side posts, I guess you call them, I don't know, the frame of the bed had holes in it, and those holes were used, you'd insert the straps, the leather straps, and you tie them to those, you know, those holes, those openings, and the mattress or the person sleeping would lie on that leather cushion. Okay, so if you want to just untie it, the whole thing would collapse. A bed didn't have that same construction. Rather, the bed, whatever they would rest on, was wider than the frame, and you'd stretch it over the frame and attach it like that. So it's just a different way of building the bed. It's not really a big deal for us, but all that we need to take out of this is we've established that it's a bed. It's a different kind of bed. That's why you have to turn it over partially. Okay, but it still is a bed. Still is a bed. Okay, and then the Gemara concludes with a psak halacha. Amar Rav Yaakov bar Acha, Amar Rav Yishuv ben Levi, halacha k'Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. Okay, the halacha is like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, that you don't have to turn the bed at all as long as you make it unusable so it falls down to the floor. That's the same thing. So you don't have to turn the bed, you just have to make sure that the substance that you know, whatever it is you're sleeping on is on the ground. Okay, I want to take 1 minute to digress because there's a very practical halacha that if you blink, you miss it. That we actually all just missed it. Okay, what happened with the king? The king was sitting on the dargish, right? That's the way he presents himself to the people after the funeral. What's that? Right. So the Gemara says that it's an unusual thing to sit on a dargish. That's clear, right? But it happens. There's some things you do that are unusual during Avelos. Okay? So Rav Soloveitchik said you can understand this Gemara as telling us something very basic about the rules pertaining to what a person may sit on during Shiva. So you probably heard, you know, this is what people are familiar with, that the chairs for the Avelim should be below a certain height. Now, what is that height? So in halacha, in other areas of halacha, we usually assume that 3 tefachim, which is somewhere between 10 and 12 inches, right, is a gap that we, based on halacha Moshe Mitzrayim, we have a tradition, a gap of that size is basically ignored. Okay, if you had a hole in your sukkah, okay, it was missing a panel, and the panel was more narrow than this diameter of 9, 10 inches, so then it's as if that hole is not there. And that's why people have these walls for their sukkah that are comprised of strings. As long as the strings are not further apart than what we're describing, that's called lavud. Lavud means we imagine as if there's no gap between those two. Okay? In a similar fashion,
The goats can get underneath. Then.
Okay, okay. If you've ever checked the Eruv, if you would walk, I was just there a week or two ago, 164th Street and LIE, okay? That is the northwest corner of our Eruv, okay? 164th Street is our border with the Kew Gardens Hills Eruv, and, you know, we share that line of lampposts going all the way down 164th. So if you're going up 164th and make a right onto the LIE, so the Eruv over there is pretty much the chain link fence that runs all the way down for, I don't know, 20, 30 blocks. But there are areas where there are holes or where it's falling apart. This is what Sam's referring to, for some reason, I don't know why, maybe there's some kids playing around there, but the chain link fence very often, like the bottom will be pushed up, you know what I'm talking about? I don't know how that happens unless someone's trying to sneak through to get to the highway. Mm-hmm. But as long as that gap is less than 3 tefachim, then for all intents and purposes, it's as if the fence or the wall goes right down to the bottom. Okay? So likewise, we can suggest that if the Gemara seems to say that a person, an avel, sits on the floor, okay, just like on Tisha B'Av, we sit on the floor, right? So what's considered on the floor? Do you have to literally get yourself dirty on the ground? Maybe as long as I'm within that range of 10 inches or so, it's tantamount to being on the floor. For all intents and purposes, the halacha considers that as being on the floor because a gap of that size, as we said, is ignored. So that's a general, the generally accepted opinion. AB told me he was working with Rabbi Zone a couple years ago to purchase new chairs for the Chabar Kedisha, and they came from China and they had to send them back because Rabbi Zone thought that they were too high. They didn't meet this criterion. And, they had to be lowered down to the ground. Rabbi Soloveitchik disagreed. Rabbi Soloveitchik was much more lenient about this.
Those are the kind of chairs we need, whatever he says.
Okay, so so right off the bat, if someone has some sort of health concern or, they have a back problem, this is one of those things where that could, especially if someone's sitting in the chair for, hours and hours, over the course of the week, you could really, really hurt yourself. So that's a cholish imbal sakana. You get up after sitting like that for a few hours, you can't even walk. So in theory, one would be exempt from that practice of avelis if it would really be so difficult for them to do. So this is Nefesh HaRav. This is the first sefer that Rav Schechter published, biographical work on Rav Soloveitchik. He published it about a year after the Rav passed away in 1994. And he quotes here that even though, as I said, the common practice is the avel should not sit below three tefachim, the Rav said, you see from this Gemara that that's not really what it should be based upon. B'nei Adam Toim Mizeh. People are mistaken about this. They think they have to either sit on the ground. I've seen that in a shiva in Eretz Yisrael. You ever seen that? In a shiva was a few years ago in Yerushalayim, they literally sit on the floor. Oh, beloved Lakarka, or at least within those three tefachim. The Rav said, it's not correct at all. Because the Gemara in Sanhedrin, which is the same parallel Gemara we just saw, the Gemara says that the dargish, right, is the arse of Gaza. The Hekshul Zed, the Gemara asks, what do you mean? You never sit on a darga. And the Gemara says, okay, so you never sit on a darga. You also don't have the commoners feeding the king. Harim Shemis Barma Debra Gemara, what emerges from the Gemara, she is so dina di yeshiva agave kisei, who she asa is a shinoi leshev agave davar she in a rugged leshev alav. The main point of this practice of avelos is just to do something very different than what you're used to. To sit in a place which is unusual for you. Now, sitting on the floor is definitely unusual, but you don't have to, get out your ruler and calculate exactly how far it is on, off the floor. If it's just something which is recognizably different than what you're used to, that would be sufficient. That would be sufficient. Okay? So the chair doesn't have to be 10 inches off the floor. It could be higher as long as it's unusual. This came up the other day. We were at the cemetery, and very often, especially if it's late in the day, many rabbanim will have the family sit in the cemetery because by the time they get home, it's going to be after sunset, and we want the official first day of Avelos to start now so that this will count as one of seven. And you don't always have a place to sit, but the office was locked up. There's no place to go. So
but you have to sit, or can you just walk between the two rows?
That we do anyway. That's the shura. That's the shura.
But after the shura, you started already. You started your shiva.
So if you ask me, even when you change your shoes, that's an act of demonstration. In my humble opinion, if someone didn't sit down by the office, the shiva already started.
That's right.
I asked Rosh Hashanah this. He thought it was 100% correct. For some reason, the minhag is to do something more more pronounced. I was talking to Rabbi Walter about this because he was at the funeral also, and he said, "You're right. You know, but this is just something a little more more obvious." So Rabbi Walter wanted them to sit near the office, but there really wasn't any place to sit. They ended up sitting on like some stairs, which was definitely lower. The other option is to sit on the ground, you know. But okay, it's also not not so geschmack, but it's also not required. Someone offered the back of their pickup truck, yep. you know, to sit on. So again, even you don't have to take out a ruler to see how low it is on the ground, but that's not a normal place to sit. You don't, you know, you don't just
depends
sit
on the commercial.
Yeah, I guess. Okay.
Commercials, they have people. The I guess office is there. You know, it's my office.
If
now.
You're if it's the Super Bowl and you're tailgating, you know, like okay, all right. Okay, all right. So maybe that's not the best example,
yeah.
but
take out beach chairs
on the ground than any place.
Okay, okay.
So we've got these so beach chairs, you know. All the,
yeah,
they're really
yeah.
low.
So I 100%. I think Ramosha Feinstein when he was sitting Shiva, he sat on an Adirondack chair. You know what those are, like those white plastic ones. You know. Okay, it's are those that low? They're not really so low, but they're but.
A little low.
They're probably a little bit lower.
They're hard to get out of.
Okay, yeah, you sit out, you know, in the bungalow colony, whatever, you know, you sit on.
Comfort.
It's not a comfortable chair. It's not something that you would choose to sit on for a long period of time. So I think Ramosha said that was okay. I think that was okay. Okay, anyway, so you see from our Gemara that as long as the king does something which is unusual, that is sufficient. And if necessary, the same would be true in someone's Shiva house as well. Okay.
That must be the reason why.
Okay, so that's interesting. That would be true even if, I mean, that's not a function of high or low. You're saying it's I'm sitting in a place which is right. Right, that's when you go back to shul. Right, or even if you go at Shabbos in the middle of Shiva, already you should you know change your place. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, it's also true. That's also true. Okay, let's continue. Okay, we can turn the camera to you next time. Okay, all right. The Gemara continues. What are we up to? Idmar Nami, Amar of Yaakov Baracha, Amar of Asi, Mita Shenakli Teha Yotzin Zok Favadayo. Rav Yaakov Baracha said the name of Ravasi that a Mita a bed Shenakli Teha Yotzin. The boards extend. What does that mean? It means you know one of those I don't know what do you call it colonial beds. You know like where the headboard and the footboard go up high and then you put like a you know, like a drapery canopy on top of it, whatever. Okay, so you can't turn a bed like that upside down, right? It just, it's not going to work.
Turn a mattress upside down.
They didn't have mattresses. That for us, that we mentioned that last week, right? That our mattress, you turn upside down, it's still a mattress, right? Don't they recommend you turn your mattresses upside down once in a while or reverse them?
Yeah,
okay.
But if you have a pillow top, you can't turn it upside
down. Okay, you're right. Okay, you know, not so fancy over here. But if you have one of these beds where you physically can't invert it, so as long as you turn it on its side, vidayo, that's enough.
You can't turn that bed on its side either. Those canopy beds.
Right. That's what the Gemara is saying. That's what it's saying.
You can't do it. The whole thing will collapse. You turn it on its side.
Oh, got it. Oh, yeah. I think you're thinking about a more elegant looking, you know, princess bed, you know, like from the fairy tales.
I'm thinking of a canopy, you tell me.
Okay.
Yes, it has the thing on the other side. I'm you know.
Okay. Tana Rabbana, Yashan Agabe Kise, Agabe Udaini, Gedola, Agabe Karka, Lo Yatsi Dechabaso. If the Avel sleeps either on a chair or he sleeps on Udaini Gedola with some sort of big, you know, a grinding machine or a board that was used to cover an opening in the floor, there were different explanations as to what this is referring to. He's sleeping in a place which is unusual to sleep in, or even if he sleeps on the floor, Lo Yatsi Dechabaso. You're not Yotze, because, according to one reading of the Gemara, it's not enough to overturn your bed. You then have to sleep upside down on the, you know, with the bed being upside down. Okay, you can't just turn over your bed and say, no, thank you, I'm going to sleep on the floor. According to one opinion, you actually have to sleep on the bed that has been overturned.
That's really not comfortable.
Not comfortable.
Well,
but you can get hurt like that.
Never went to bed except maybe
There's a Rosh Hashiva in YU who his son was a friend of mine growing up, and he told me he must have been, I don't know, 18, 19, 20 at the time. He said, in 20 years of my life, I never saw my father sleep in a bed.
Wow.
Either he was learning or he fell asleep on the sofa. You know? But I many years later, I asked that particular Rebbe, I said, you know, asking about it, like if he sleeps in the sukkah, you know, what does he do? And he said, it just works out that it's not really a shaila. So he didn't want to give me an answer, but I understood what he was saying. Okay, Tana Rabbanan. No, I'm sorry. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Shalokiyim kviyas hamitzvah. So Rabbi Yochanan says, he's just elaborating on that b'risa. So what does it mean that he did not fulfill his obligation? Doesn't mean he blew the whole thing. The whole shiva is out the window. It just means that particular detail of kviyas hamitzvah. Don't think you accomplished what you needed to do just by turning over the bed. There's more to it. You also have to actually sleep on the bed, according to that opinion. Okay. Next. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan. Mechabdin umarbitzin beveis ha'avil. You were allowed to sweep the house, and marbitzin, back in the day when they had dirt floors, so it would get very dusty. So every once in a while they would spritz a little water, you know, not to make it muddy there, but at least to settle the dust. So it wouldn't get stuck on your feet, I guess, when you walked around. And you're allowed to do that in the house of the oval, right? The oval is not supposed to be engaged in work. You're supposed to sit and really do nothing. But there are some basic house chores that are permissible, such as, you know, maintaining, you know, reasonable cleanliness in the house. You don't have to let things get unruly.
Is this the oven himself or the guests?
Even the oven. Obviously, there's someone else to do it. Great, but he's allowed to do it himself if he needs to. Now we had also you can do the dishes. You wash the plates and the cups and so forth. The pitchers. There's no chiyuv to eat off of dirty plates, you know, they don't have disposable things. There's no chiyuv to eat from dirty kalim just because you're an aval. You can keep the place in reasonable, you know, good shape. The ein mevinas hamugmar ves habesam ves aval. Okay, so now we have a new halacha. This isn't housework. Mugmar was, I don't know, sort of like incense. They used to, as a luxury activity, they would take spices and they would put them on top of coals, sprinkle on top of coals, and that would fill the house with a nice aroma. Okay, and besamim, okay, we know what besamim is. So you're not supposed to do that in the Beis HaAvel. And again, the reason is because that's a luxury. That's, you know.
Would the scented candles, would that, not that I use them, but.
That could be a problem. Yeah.
What about like Febreze? You know, spray Febreze?
Okay, so stay tuned. Hold on one second. Murray is going to talk about Febreze in 1 minute. Okay, believe it or not.
Wow, back then.
By name.
Okay, Febreze.
I've scented their clothes with Mugmar. There's another Gemara.
Oh, yeah, right, correct. Right, they used to, you know, downy fresh.
I think they lit marijuana ropes also. That's yet another
component. Okay.
I'm not making that up. Do stuff I make up, but not that.
Okay, so the Gemara says, is that really so? Amy, is it true that there's this prohibition of burning the mugmar in the house? Vatani Bar Kapara. Bar Kapara taught us the following halacha, nothing to do with Avelis, has to do with Havdalah. Ein mevarchen lo al mugmar v'lo al besamim beveisa avil. If, let's say you're making havdalah in the Shiva house, okay? So forget the Shiva house, but you make havdalah. So if there is some, you know, they have some good smelling spices or mugmar in the beis avil, you shouldn't use that for havdalah. Okay, so wait a minute. You're telling me that I have it in the house, what's it doing there? If you just told me that I'm not supposed to have it in the house, then why are you telling me I can't use it for havdalah? It should be obvious I can't use it for havdalah because it's not there. Right, so what's it doing in the house? That's the question. Gemara says, "Bruchi hud lo mevarchin ha'isuyim ha'sinan." Sounds like you just can't use it for the bracha of besamim in your havdalah, but as far as being in the house, it's okay, right? So which is it? Can you have it in the house? You can't have it in the house. Gemara says, "Lo kasha."
Says en mevin, doesn't say you can't bring it from the outside. En mevin, it says.
Yeah. Okay, you don't. What do you mean? I'm supposed to? If you can't bring it, you certainly can't light it up if it's already there.
How did it get there?
What if it's there?
Okay.
It's in your house.
I'm not sure. If you remember from the Gemara Brachos, whenever it talks about mugmar, it says mevin es hamugmar.
Yeah.
I think it could just mean the servant brought it in from the other room. I don't think it means that, like, you know, someone brought it over from down the block, brought you bagels and lox and mugmar. You know, I don't think that's how it worked. I think the mugmar was
it's on the shiva plate.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So it was there. I'm not so bothered by that. I don't think that this was a special delivery.
And the mugmar.
And the mugmar. Okay, so the Gemara says, so what's it doing there? Lo kasha, ha bebeis ha'avel, ha bebeis ha'menachmen. There's a distinction. Even though we've been using these terms interchangeably, the beis ha'avel and the beis ha'menachmen are actually two different things. What's the difference? Beis ha'menachmen is the Shiva house, the way we refer to Shiva house, where the menachmen, the community members, the friends, come and they do nuicham avilim. They say, amokim menachem eschem. Beis ha'avel sometimes refers to in the period before the funeral where the niftar is sitting. After the person dies, he's in the house, and the Chavar Kedisha comes, okay? But they're not ready to take out the body to bury it. So that's the Beis HaAvel. So it was very common because if the body was there for too long, it would start to smell. So they would bring air freshener, Febreze or something, in the meantime so that people could withstand the, just being there. So in that situation, you're allowed to bring Mugmar, Besamim, simply for the purpose of deodorizing. You're not allowed to bring it as a luxury item, but to deodorize, you are allowed to. Okay? There's two chidushim over here. This is very, very wide range in terms of application. This is nafkamina for, let's say, Yom Kippur, or let's say Tisha B'Av for sure. Tisha B'Av, you can use deodorant even though you can't spray perfume because the purpose is different. Right? You're not supposed to anoint yourself, not supposed to rub on things. But if the point is not to, you know, what you're adding, but rather what you're taking away, you're deodorizing, that's permissible. Okay? Because that's not a luxury that you're trying to avoid on Tisha B'Av, for example. Okay? Another interesting principle that you learn from here is, okay, what happened to Abdullah? Why can't I use it for Abdullah? The answer is, Bori mine v'samim, you only praise Hashem for the enjoyment of the smell when it's there for the proactive enjoyment. But if it's there just to deodorize, you don't make a bracha on that. Right, that's not what besamim were created for. That's not the mila of besamim. That's just trying to make it, take away the stench. Okay, so that you learn from this Gemara also. No, that's fine. We're saying that don't choose to use a good smelling item that was only brought in for the purpose of deodorizing, because you never make a bracha on a deodorizing thing. Okay, if it's only there to take away the odor, it doesn't qualify for the bracha b'sam.
If you have right b'sam,
your cinnamon or whatever you use, that's fine. Okay, I'm kind of torn. I have to stop a few minutes early because we have a little administrative work to do. Okay, I'll tell you what I mean in a second. But we did skip one line. We're at the Mishnah. We'll pick up the Mishnah next time probably. But we skipped one line on the very end of Chav Vavim Beis. Let's just go back to it for 2 minutes right now. Very end of Chav Vavim Beis. So this is just my absent-mindedness last week. Tana Rabbanan. The last 5 words on the page. Tana Rabbanan haholech mimakom lamakom. If a person is going from place to place, now on to Chav Zainam Ralph, im yachol lemayit beisko yemayit. If he's able to minimize his business, then he should do so. V'im lav, and if he can't minimize his business, yegal gal imayim. He should team up with other people he's traveling with. Right, what in the world is this talking about? Simple pshat is, he's on the road, he's on a business trip, and he gets a call that a relative passed away. Okay? So one of the restrictions on an avil is that he's not supposed to go to work. He's not supposed to have his regular, business conducted as usual during Shiva. But he's on the road. So here we say, if he's able to minimize, he should. Sounds like he has permission to do some business, right? But I thought he's in the middle of avilus. So we don't have time for it right now, but Tosas discusses couple possibilities of what it means. It could mean he's just, business doesn't mean his livelihood. It means he's on the road. He's got to stop off and buy a sandwich. He's got to stop off and buy a drink. So he should minimize the business that he needs to do, even if it's simply for, eating, right? Because as Hostess points out, when you're on the road, you tend to buy more food than if you're at home. If you're at home, you have a fridge, or someone else can go and get something for you, prepare something for you. But when you're on the road, so you eat out. So afal pichein, you should try to keep it simple and minimize and do as little business as you can, even though it's your tzarchei suda, it's the basic food that you need to eat. That's one possibility. The other possibility is, Tosafot points out that earlier, the halacha is that if it's not apparent, there are not, the restrictions on continuing business are not as severe. I mean, for a parent, you're supposed to say, bless you, you're not supposed to do anything during Shiva for a parent. If it's for another relative, the Gemara says, it's up to you. If you want to minimize business, then you can. But you don't have to. So Tosa says, it could mean that our Gemara is where he loses a parent. But since he's on the road, right, so we give him a break. Because he already set out on the trip. We're not going to make him lose, whatever opportunity he had when he was on the trip. And therefore, he should minimize if possible. Because it can't be talking about if he lost another relative, like a brother or a sister, because he wouldn't be obligated to minimize his business altogether. Okay, that's just a side point. Not going to go any further into that question, but I just wanted to make sure we did not skip any lines.
If you're on a plane, let's say,
yeah.
And the Alvaro said that you should don't even touch it, just don't worry about the word, but you deserve it.
Well, it doesn't. It doesn't say you have to eat less. It just says you should do less business.
You have to call in and let people know you're not coming in.
Yeah, you don't have to pretend like they don't exist, you know. And there are many exceptions, especially if a person is going to lose a significant amount of money. There are ways to deal with it. I just need everybody's help, including everybody who's on Zoom for a second. The reason why I'm stopping early is because there are two Thursdays in February that I have conflicts with YU and whatnot. One time when this came up before, we did it on a Wednesday night. So I wanted to get some sort of poll. If people still be able to make it Wednesday night, if only a handful of people are going to be available, then we'll just postpone. But if Wednesday night is a decent,
what's Thursdays?
When is this in February?
The 16th and the 23rd, I think.
Eventually, I'll be told as 9 o'clock, so he can go.
Eventually, I probably will be able to make it Thursday night.
Not a okay.
Until
okay. 16, thank you.
15, I'm okay. 22nd. Yeah, okay. Wednesday worked for me okay. For that, those weeks.
Either way, we can record it. We'll do it on Zoom. I need.
There's nothing like live.
Nothing like. I agree with you. I agree with you.
The thing okay. Is, Wednesday we have this group with.
Right, so I would work with him to just maybe push it a little bit earlier or whatever we did last time. Okay, but I need your help for one other question. AB suggested I get like a roster. Because if there are changes to the schedule, I just want to make sure that everybody gets contacted. Okay, so I'll give you the list of the people that I have. If I don't call your name, I feel like we're in school. If I don't call your name, let me know. Okay, or if you know someone who's normally here that I should have on the list, please let me add them to the list. Okay, Heshy Greenberger, Yossi Lubavitz, Shapsi Kinnerik, Sam Kosofsky, Saul Galernter, Barry Rosenblum, Miriam and Howie Schatz, Jerry Todris, Mr. Kaufman, Phil Fruchter, Yona Rockoff, Howard Stiefel, Murray Zilbring, Howard Schwab is in Israel, Tim Boxer, Larry Goldsman, Marvin Lazar, Joseph Donath, Beverly Lermer, Lenny Dressler, and Isaac Reifer. If there's anyone who you think should be added, okay, so.
And Paul Katz.
Okay, so Paul Katz, thank you.
Please add me, Bruce Yeaman.
Bruce Yeaman, thank you. And Josh Rosenthal. And Dr. Bernstein, we'll get you down also. And didn't get you, right?
Don't forget Ron over here.
Yes, okay, Ron for sure. Okay. I just want to send out an email to make sure. I didn't mention that. I didn't call your name, did I?
Okay.
Boris, I have to add you also.
Benji.
Okay, thank you. Benji, Mark Spector. Okay, I think, and Saul Grisman. Okay, so I think we have everybody. Chris Grisman? Is it with a...
With like three S's.
Okay. I'll get it right next time. Grisman. Okay. Oh, no. I'm sorry. I did not get you. Okay, good. I think we got everybody, looks like. Baruch Hashem. There's some unidentified iPads. Okay, but I'm assuming if you haven't spoken up already, then I have you on the list.
Question.
Okay. Yes.
9:45.
Oh, for those weeks, we have to send out a notification. Okay, so I will have a better idea hopefully by next week, and we can make sure we get the word out. Okay, everyone have a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
Good Shabbos.
Good Shabbos.